Welcome to Happy Hour with Julie and Liz.
So, Liz.
Yes.
Like every week when we talk about the 80s, we can bring up one of our disputes about music.
Yes. I'm listening.
This week is no exception.
You do this on purpose.
So of course we can fight. I do.
I know. Hey, look.
This is my humor in life. Just let me be. So, this week in 1986, Van Halen's 5150 knocked Whitney Houston out of the top spot on the Billboard album charts.
Ooh. What? Oh, it was Whitney Houston's album. Huh.
Yes, but our dispute is...
over 5150 in 1984. No, I know what our dispute is.
Okay. Where? I just want to reemphasize it for those trying to avoid
for
it.
For those new listeners who don't know, Julie and I have this ongoing dispute about who is the better frontman for Van Halen, whether it was David Lee Roth or whether it was this other guy, whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy Hagar, Van Hagar. Blah. That's our dispute. So weigh in if you haven't yet on Twitter and tell us who is right, Liz or Julie. And it's Liz. But that's fine.
I will say I do feel like this is one of the few instances where you do win people. But, you know, I would urge people to listen to both albums this weekend and then, you know, not just recollect what you remember, but really listen to both and then tell us what you think.
Whatever. I mean, I think it's obvious, but you can do what Julie said. You're still going to come out on the right side, which is it's David Lee Roth. So anyway, let's go into the news this week. There's so much going on.
Yep.
So I'll start, I guess. I'm going to start. Are you cool with that? Julie's cool with that?
Yes.
All right. So the big one of the big stories this week are these protests going on around universities and college campuses around the country. And some of the protesting isn't confined to college campuses, but the high profile ones are at Columbia, Yale. There's a bunch of them. They're going on. I think yesterday there was this situation at Emory, some in California. USC has canceled their in-person graduation, which I believe those are the same people that also didn't get to graduate high school because of COVID. So now they also don't get a college graduation because there was a controversial speaker at their graduation. And whenever there's a controversial speaker, at least one side threatens some sort of direct action, violence, protesting, who knows? So USC has canceled in-person graduation. So I thought it would be good to kind of take a step back and talk a little bit about what is really going on here. And what is really going on here has absolutely nothing to do with Israel or Palestine. It doesn't. That is a distraction for people to get into fights about a thousands of year long territorial dispute and not take a look at what the big picture is. And what the big picture is that this is the same thing as Occupy Wall Street. It's the same thing as Ferguson and Hands Up, Don't Shoot. It's the same thing as George Floyd. It's the same thing as Defund the Police. This is part of a much larger operation that is designed to, it's a revolution. And the same people wearing the little outfits and holding up the Gaza flag and the Palestinian flag are the same people that were demanding the police be defunded, that were claiming that, going off about George Floyd. It's all part of the same operation. It doesn't matter what the specifics are. There are forces, revolutionary forces, that are interested in overthrowing the structures of America. That's been going on on several fronts, and this physical violent protesting that's going on is just one part of it. And so it's always couched in any attempt to shut down the civil discord, which is not just a protest, like someone's holding up a sign or something, or somebody's waving a flag or giving a speech, these people are blocking entrances, they're blocking streets, they're blocking bridges. They're, in many cases, there's violence going on. And I'm not talking about people saying nasty things to you, maybe ethnic slurs. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm a First Amendment, you know, enthusiast. If an ethnic slur is still a First Amendment right, it's the First Amendment, you're allowed to say those things. And in fact, you know, Julie and I, as Gen Xers, we grew up with the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, right? But names will never hurt me. And I just mentioned in passing, just a few days ago on Twitter, and I'm not really active on Twitter that much. I don't tweet a lot. I don't interact with people. I get information from Twitter, but I'm not there to have interactions and engage with people. Somebody called me a whore on Twitter. I'm a whore. I'm a lot of things, but that's not one of them. Anyway, somebody called me a all right, because, well, it's random. So I had responded to my friend Tom Bevan, who is the founder of Real Clear Politics. Full disclosure, Julie and I are both affiliated with the Real Clear Empire. He had tweeted that he was happy that the new series of Severance had just wrapped being filmed. Severance is a TV series.
That's, I saw that.
Apple Plus, fabulous series, really good. And so I had responded to his tweet by saying, finally. And apparently that triggered someone who then responded to me and said I was a whore. So, you know, do I like that? No. Should it be illegal? No. I brush it off. You know, people who spend a lot of time on Twitter tend to be psychopaths and mentally unstable. Anyway, but my point is, when we're talking about these protests, these just aren't regular traditional First Amendment exercises of getting up and giving a speech and holding a sign and waving a flag or handing out flyers. This is actual civil disruption of the working and the everyday going ons at a university, whether it's blocking a bridge, whether it's shutting down streets. It is there to disrupt. And it should be familiar because, again, we saw it the summer of 2020, the summer of love, when they were burning down D.C. Is that a First Amendment activity? I don't think so. Where they were assaulting Capitol Police officers and law enforcement officers in D.C. and in other cities when they burned Minneapolis to the ground. It's all the same thing. Now, the New York Post has an article today, to no one's surprise, that at the highest levels, this is being funded by George Soros. And there are other foundations involved in this too. The Tides Foundation, which is, I believe, is affiliated with Teresa Hines Carey, Mrs. John Carey.
And Soros.
Don't know. And Soros.
Right.
That at the highest levels, that is where money is coming from. Because a lot of these people we see on campus, we're seeing pictures of all of these people. It looks like everybody on these campuses is just, you know, screaming about, I don't know, whatever, from the land to the sea, whatever, Palestine will be free, whatever, that these aren't all students. These are professional disruptors who, again, they're the same BLM people. They're the same George Floyd people. They're the same defund the police people. It's all the same thing. This is a operation to continue to grow and build support for these kinds of revolutionary activities, which are to basically destroy the structures of civil society and the American way of life. That's what's happening here. So yes, Soros is funding it. And in many of these cities where things are happening, because again, Columbia is in New York, there are issues at NYU, these large cities with these protests, they are coincidentally also represented by with a Soros prosecutor. So for instance, in University of Texas Austin, they arrested a bunch of people who were, again, disrupting, not First Amendment like flag waving, but disrupting, physical disrupting. Those people were arrested and the Soros prosecutors dropped the charges. So it's like right. This Soros carousel where it's just a revolving door to happen. So a lot of these groups, Students for Justice in Palestine, I think there's another one, U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, they're just one of many, 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 many affinity groups who are ready to mobilize at any moment given a cause, not a specific cause. So who's paying for this? Who's busing people in that aren't students? Who's bailing people out? Who's providing them lawyers when they're charged, which almost are never charged, except in like Florida and tech. Well, I don't know. It looks like in Texas, they're not getting charged. But in Florida, Ron DeSantis and his people, Ashley Moody's the AG of Florida, they were having none of it. Right. I mean, the Golden Gate Bridge, I believe, was shut down for 4 hours earlier this week, and a bridge was shut down in Florida for 15 minutes. OK, because fuck around and find out in Florida. And in these really the red states really need to step up now because the federal agencies and these Soros prosecutors are not going to stop the disruption. Again, I'm not talking about First Amendment protected activity. I'm talking strictly disruption, blocking streets, keeping people from getting where they need to go, possibly blocking ambulances, blocking people perhaps with medical emergencies. I mean, this is an attempt to, again, destroy these already fragile institutions in our country. So I just want everybody to keep in mind that you can go on social media and you can fight with people and say, oh, it's Israel, or oh no, it's Palestine. It's a distraction to keep you from looking at what's really going on, where there are forces that are actively trying to overthrow this country, like legitimately, not the fake ones we're going to talk about soon when Julie starts talking about the Trump cases and all the lawsuits there. So that's my TED talk on this. I wish more people were attuned to what is going on for real and paying attention to that. So, Julie, what are your thoughts on my lovely soliloquy here?
Well, thank you for that insight. I mean, I think it's hilarious, not the things that they're chanting, but I really don't care what happens to these elite colleges.
I know, right?
They can burn. Let them burn. I don't care. And
burn them down.
And look, the people ultimately responsible for this behavior are the parents of these students. Now, of course, you do have professional agitators. You've got professors, you know, who I think, I'm not sure if it was Harvard or somewhere, one of the women, one of the Karens screaming, I'm an economics professor. You can't arrest me.
She's a philosophy professor. That was at Emory. That's hilarious.
It was hilarious. So, I mean, this is what you get when you allow your children. I mean, I doubt that they're paying the 90 grand a year to go to Columbia or Harvard or any of these elite institutions. So, you know, that's who's to blame. Ultimately are the parents. And then, of course, the weak deans and, you know, law enforcement, some capacity, really can't or won't do very much. So I don't really, I don't care. I mean, this is what you get. And so now they're calling off graduations. And of course, these demonstrations are spreading to other campuses across the country. It is orchestrated. But I guess also how this backfires on Biden and the Democrats. I mean, this is not, and then you have big, you know, benefactors who are pulling their funding. Who is the one who just pulled from? Was it Bob Robert Kraft?
Yeah, Robert Kraft, Patriots.
Patriots owner. Yeah. So, you know, okay. Sorry. I mean, this is what the left has created. This is what academia has created. And, you know, I think it's terrifying for your Jewish student on these campuses. It's terrifying for them and to be told, no, you can't, don't walk on campus.
I mean, the rabbi, I think it was at Columbia, came out and said, if you're Jewish, you need to get out of here because no one can keep you safe, which is, again, this is, what is this, the Thunderdome? Is this where we are now?
Right.
That is, but again, this is about tearing down the structures, and you could kind of see it develop over the course, really starting with Occupy, where they're pushing, and like Chaz in Seattle, where, you know, they decided to, they formed their own country in the middle of Seattle or whatever, where there was no law and order. I mean, it's a gradual pushing of the limits to see how far they can get. And with these people, it's always two steps forward and then one step back, because there is some reaction to it. There is some correction. I can't remember which school came out and said, yeah, you're not we're going to shut this shit down before it starts. So there is pushback, but at the end of it, they're still one step ahead, right? They push the boundaries. They've got their slogans, their slogan now. This is First Amendment violation. You know, when Abbott shut down the crap at University of Texas Austin, they were claiming, oh, it's a First Amendment activity. You don't have a First Amendment activity to like physically stop someone from going to where they're going. So, right. But it's still, they're still making progress. And I think this is moving towards some sort of election disruption, to be honest. I mean, we're almost at summer. Summer is the worst, right? We remember 2020 summer. You know, we're going to have more of this. It's going to drag out. And again, there's always going to be a cause. It doesn't matter what the cause is. There's going to be some reason. It's going to be the same playbook over and over again, pushing, pushing, pushing the boundaries. I mean, we haven't recovered from defund the police. The police don't enforce the law anymore. Right. That was a win, right? You can just walk into places and steal stuff and walk out. No one's going to stop you. They're not going to prosecute you. So anyway, I interrupted you, Julie. Please continue. I'm sorry.
No, you've been covering this. I really haven't had a chance to, but, you know, I'm interested to see how this will impact the elections, if at all. I mean, we know that, I guess that's my cynical view of it, is how this is going to hurt Joe Biden and Democrats, especially in some of these states, you know, like Michigan, other places. And will this continue? Now, I mean, campuses are shutting down in the next couple of weeks. School's over. So will they restart this in the fall? And if they do, what's the impact?
I don't think that they're going to stop. It doesn't need to be on a university, just like we saw all the stuff going on in the summer of 2020, where it wasn't on college campuses. They don't need to be on college campuses. So I don't think it's going to stop. I think it's going to continue and it's going to escalate. Now, I do agree that it's possible to hurt Biden if people opposed to this. I want to say the right, but they're just feckless and incompetent. If they properly fight back against it, because as a rule, people care very much about public safety. It is almost always a number one issue for people when you ask them what is the most important issue to you, you know, going on today. People do care about public safety more than they care about, you know, like cap and trade and, you know, all sorts of these highfalutin legislative garbage that's going on. They care about public safety. So if this is well messaged as a public safety issue, then yes, I think it could hurt Biden. And people see it. Now, there's censorship on social media, not so much on Twitter, but on Facebook or Instagram, where a lot of stuff is censored. So people don't. I'm sorry. Oh, can you hear Electra?
Dear God.
All right. Hold on. I got to take her out of my office. I forgot to shut the door.
Okay. Sounds like a 3-month-old baby, like a newborn. Okay. Well, I guess I'll take over as Liz.
No, I'm back.
Depends for her.
No, I'm back. I excommunicated her. I forgot to shut my office door because she does like to come in and scream. And she is deaf now. She cannot hear anymore. So she's 18. And I will add, she is a tiny 6-pound cat that has the lungs of Ethel Merman. I mean, she is loud.
I've never heard a cat that loud.
She's never. So loud. She does this at night too. This is why I have a sleep disorder. Anyway, I do think that if the right, and I'm winking, I'm air quoting, you know, can message this as a public safety issue, it's a winning issue, because again, people are sympathetic to free speech, but again, they're not sympathetic to violence. They're not sympathetic to the provocateurs out there. And it's a winning issue. The question is, will anyone do that to counter the way that the left always presents their causes as like it's a justice issue. You know, they always have justice in their name, the Justice Democrats and Students for Justice and Palestine. It always is about justice for them. So it's very emotional driven, because leftist communists, they're emotional people. They're not rational people. So, you know, I think it could very much impact the hurt Biden and hurt the Democrats as well. I mean, you're talking also about down ballot races in these states as well. And mm-hmm. in these cities, you know, who are the prosecutors that let these kids out so they could do it again and get arrested again and set fires? But I guarantee you, this is not over when school's out. It's going to continue, just like we saw in 2020. It is going to continue.
Well, and plus you've got the conventions. So Republican National yep. Convention in Milwaukee in July, then August in Chicago. I have to come back to Florida for that party. But I mean, obviously the DNC one in Chicago is going to be pretty lit.
Lit.
I mean, you've got major college campuses there. Kids will be going back to Northwestern and University of Chicago and DePaul and all those schools. So they that's going to be fun to watch from a distance. I will not be there.
I hope you get out. I hope you watch out from Florida because I would not want to be there.
I will watch it from the safety of the suburbs, hopefully. I don't know. Is anywhere safe? So, yes, interesting
developments
there. Thank you.
Speaking of, Julie, we've had court cases palooza this week. So what's the latest?
So let's work a little bit backwards here. I think what people really want to know about is what happened during oral arguments on Thursday for the Supreme Court, considering whether, this is for the first time, whether a former president is immune from criminal prosecution. So this originated out of Special Counsel Jack Smith's 4-count indictment against Donald Trump for the events of January 6th and allegedly overturning the 2020 election. He indicted Trump in August. In October of 2023, Donald Trump's team filed a motion to dismiss based on presidential immunity. In December of 2023, Judge Chutkan, an Obama appointee, handed down the history-making order. It said, for the first time, a president does not enjoy immunity for criminal prosecution for his official acts or what he did in office.
Wait, can I ask? I want to just ask, maybe someone else also who's listening has this question. And I'm not following this like you are, but what specific acts did Trump do, specific acts that Jack Smith and company are claiming not immune, like, from prosecution because he was president, right? Like, did he murder someone or rape them? Right. So what specific things, because again, this is in a court case, at least theoretically, there's supposed to be specific charges, you know, breaking and entering or carjacking. So what are the things that Trump did that these folks are claiming were not part of his official duties, but were like just personal things that he did, like shoplifting a lipstick from CVS. Okay, go ahead.
Correct. So, Liz, I think most Americans would agree if a president murdered someone in the Oval Office, like a congressman or something, that, yeah, sure, he probably should be prosecuted for that.
Who was it? Who was the congressman?
Well, let's qualify that.
Yeah.
It was a mercy.
What are we talking about here?
but even so this is not, to your point, specific crimes. He is charged with 4 extremely vague conspiracy and obstruction counts. So conspiracy to defraud the United States, 2 obstruction counts, the 1512C2 that we talked about last week, that the Supreme Court also heard oral arguments on last Tuesday and signaled, I think, pretty strongly that they're set to reverse how DOJ has interpreted that document shredding case or law. And then another, conspiracy to deprive the rights of Americans, claiming that Donald Trump's efforts to uncover what we know voting fraud in key states deprived the 81 million, LOL, people who voted for Joe Biden in 2020. So these are the vague statutes. And some of the justices yesterday, Brett Kavanaugh specifically, brought up the fact that these are so broad and so vague that they could be applied to any presidential action. you know, could it apply to a president who stood up and lied about, say, weapons of mass destruction to start a war? You know, could it be used for in any capacity? And the answer, of course, is yes. So that is important to underscore that these are not specific crimes that Jack Smith has accused Donald Trump of committing. This
relates to... Isn't that required, though? But isn't that, like, again, not a lawyer, and I know you're not, but you're almost, you're basically a lawyer. Don't they have to say what you're accused of doing? I mean, is this a Kafka novel or something where you, Gregor Samsa, wakes up as a cockroach? Like, I don't see people talk about this, and that's why I ask, which is specifically, what is the crime? Anyway, right. You say he's defrauding right? You said it's defrauding, right? Is that right? Or depriving people of
conspiracy. So there's
conspiracy three
counts and one obstruction count.
Okay. And all right. Okay. Go on. Throwing my hands up.
And I know the elements in the indictment, and keep in mind, this indictment was handed up by a grand jury in Washington, D.C. So these are all Biden voters. These are not legal specialists. These are people plucked from a city that voted 93% for Joe Biden and hate Donald Trump with a passion. So it's a very easy no-brainer to get an indictment against any Republican or conservative or Trump in D.C. The elements of the indictment, Liz, as you know, these are well-worn accusations against Trump, that he conspired to initiate the slate of alternative electoral certificates in these states, that he contacted Georgia officials, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, and others, saying, and again, the mischaracterization, you've got to find me 11,000 blah, blah, blah votes. Then what clearly is a core function of the presidency, threatening to replace Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen, a Barr lackey who was doing whatever he could to prevent any DOJ investigation into voting fraud in these states, threatening to replace Jeffrey Rosen with Jeffrey Clark, who we had on a few weeks ago. A president can fire his attorney general every day if he wants to and appoint a new one.
Isn't that a constitutional power? Okay, go on.
Well, appointing leaders of agencies in the executive branch, I mean, there was no DOJ when the Constitution was written, as you know, but it doesn't matter. It's an executive branch department, and he appoints, it's presidential pleasure, privilege. He appoints who he wants to run those agencies. So there are clearly elements that falls within the scope of presidential power. Other things like using private lawyers, this is one thing they discussed yesterday, using private lawyers to call heads of, say, the RNC or other political organizations to help with, hold hearings or participate in hearings, state legislative hearings, or to create this alternative slate of electors, which happens basically every 4 years. The National Archives has already said that they get, you know, alternative electoral certificates every presidential election. It's not a crime. So these are the high crimes and misdemeanors that Jack Smith has claimed Donald Trump is a criminal for. And that was part of the discussion, the debate yesterday. Thursday. So I don't know when we're putting this up.
What were your takeaways from listening to the questioning from the justices? Do you feel like they were sympathetic? Are we looking at 5-4? I mean, we're obviously not looking at 9-0, but are we looking at 5-4? What do you think is going to go down?
So first, let's talk about the view, ladies, on the court.
It's always the freaking women.
Ugh. As dumb and strident as Ketanji Brown Jackson is, Sonia Sotomayor is just an idiot.
She is a moron. Yeah.
Difficult to listen to her. I don't think
she's not there because she's smart. All right. We can say that. Let's be honest on Happy Hour. We're honest, if nothing else here. She is not there because she is smart. Okay.
She's not there because she's smart, because she's not. Ketanji Brown Jackson is only slightly easier to listen to. She's clearly not prepared on the issues. Again, not surprising. She kind of rattles on and on. And a few times this week, I think she's had to be cut off, both her and Sonia Sotomayor. Elaina Kagan is fine. I mean, she's a lefty, but sometimes she comes up with some good questions. And, you know, then you got Amy Coney Barrett. She's the wild card. And, you know, she's basically,
she's,
I
got
think,
too much. That's just too much estrogen on that court. It's,
yeah,
not good.
Yes, there really is. So, but the flip side then are the men on the court and, of course, conservative leaning. So there was concern. I thought Brett Kavanaugh did a very good job. Of course, he's an expert on the, you know, executive power and functions. So I think he did a very good job, measured, very good questions that he presented. You know, Neil Gorsuch is, as I've listened to him the past three hearings, the Colorado one and then 1512C2 and then this one, he really gets it. And he has such a good way of bringing up political, you know, comparisons to both sides. And they essentially expressed great concern. First of all, who determines and how do you determine what is an official act that should be protected,
right,
versus a personal, political, or private act? Who makes that determination? Jack, yeah, Smith? Judge Chutkan?
Bill Barr?
Bill, yeah, Barr? I mean, take your pick. Sonia Sotomayor?
Right. I love how the DOJ is supposed to be separate from the presidency when a Republican is president, but like totally Eric Holder was Obama's wingman when Obama was president. You know, it's this, I mean, that's what the DOJ is doing, right? They're elevating themselves above the presidency to bring these charges at all and say, well, we've decided these are personal acts and these are not executive office acts. That's what's happened. That's what it looks like to me.
Right. So I think, just to kind of wrap this up, and people can find all sorts of coverage, and there's good clips of, and John Roberts also, I think, did a good job. The real loser in that hearing was the D.C. Circuit, the appellate court, the three chicks on that panel. So you have four women, Chutkan, two Biden appointees on the D.C. appellate court, Michelle Childs and Florence Pan, also both diversity hires, and Karen Henderson, who was appointed by George H.W. Bush. So you have these four women, of course, ugh, who have denied presidential immunity for the first time ever. John Roberts and I think it was Sam Alito, not very impressed with the hasty opinion by the D.C. appellate court. So I think eventually what is going to happen is they're going to kick this back to the circuit, or really back to Judge Chutkan, demanding that they figure out what is official, what's personal. If you still want to charge on official acts, you better figure out, you better explain why, which is what Michael Dreeben, who is defending the DOJ, argued, that even if it was an official act, and this is what the appellate court said too, that you still are subjected to criminal prosecution. So I think the court's probably going to send that back and say you need to delineate. You know, and I think it was Amy Coney Barrett. Someone suggested to Michael Dreeben, why don't you just take out what you know are official acts, i.e. replacing Jeffrey Rosen with Jeffrey Clark? Why don't you remove that element from the indictment? And Dreeben basically said, well, no, because they all work collaboratively together. This was all part of the scheme to overthrow the 2020 election, replacing Jeffrey Rosen with Jeffrey Clark. So, you know, this will definitely delay the January 6th trial in Washington past the election, because if the Supreme Court waits until the end of June, and I think they're going to be more cautious with this because they found the D.C. appellate court ruling so offensive. It only took them a month between oral arguments and handing down this opinion on such an important matter. I think the Supreme Court is going to low-key throw them some shade and take their time. So if they come back the end of June, Liz, and they remand this back to the lower courts and say, you need an evidentiary hearing, you know, Jack Smith, you need to reconsider this in your indictment, et cetera. You know, that will go into the summer. Then whatever the lower courts decide, appellate court, this will be kicked back to the Supreme Court. So, I mean, they're running out of time. So,
well, and that's our goal, right? Is to get this done before the election, because yes. This is the ultimate election interference that we're seeing in action right now.
Correct. Well, look at what happened on Thursday. So Donald Trump is stuck as a defendant in this garbage case in Manhattan with a compromised partisan judge, Juan Merchan, and he is not able, you know, he was the petitioner in the oral argument. It's Donald J. Trump versus the United States. He has a right, a constitutional right, to be present in a court proceeding relating to his case. And Juan Merchan would not release him from sitting there as a defendant. You're not participating. You're not a witness. You're not taking the stand. He didn't need to be there while David Pecker was testifying. But Juan Merchan, denying Trump's constitutional rights to be in the Supreme Court while they're debating, you know, this consequential, historic, unprecedented matter with his name on the case. It's just...
Well, also, they're keeping him from campaigning. I mean, maybe he doesn't want to do either, and he wants to go on the campaign trail, but he can't do that either. So,
and then Joe Biden posts some snarky post on Twitter the other day. Oh, here are Donald Trump's campaign events today. None. Because he's in that court.
Yeah. That sounds
because
like
we're DOJ.
Something would be admitted into evidence for some lawsuit that Trump's constitutional rights were violated by this judge. Just saying. But we all know what Biden's campaign schedule is, too, which is to be escorted around. Now, there was an article today about how he has a bunch of aides around him at all times, you know, because I yes. guess he looks extra feeble and unsteady on his feet. So those are Joe Biden's events.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, reading nonverbal cues like pause.
Yeah. Please clap. That was still one of the best.
Four more years. Pause.
Although when Jeb said, please clap, that wasn't actually on a teleprompter. Nobody was clapping for him as was proper. Yeah. So, well, every week it gets crazier. So go ahead, continue.
So we'll figure out. So I think even the corporate media, long faces all over the place, realizing that the Supreme Court is very skeptical. They're skeptical of total immunity too, but certainly not acts that you would consider presidential. So they
just more weaponization of the government, right? Where some entity, like I guess obviously it would be the DOJ, gets to decide if they don't like something the president does. And again, this is something that will hang over every, if we have a republic anymore, we kind of don't, but let's just pretend we do. You know, every president will have that hanging over their head. That is, at any moment, the DOJ can decide something they've done is they don't have immunity for. And
right,
that is,
and that's the slippery slope,
and that is the problem.
They're saying, you know, and Brett Kavanaugh, Alito, Gorsuch, others were saying, okay, we're not just considering that. I think it was Gorsuch said, we're making a law for the ages. This is not just about the case before us. We are going to be determining whether we start this perpetual cycle of new presidents, incoming presidents, using their DOJ to criminally prosecute their predecessor of the other party. And,
they're in office, if Trump gets reelected, they'll do what he's in office. I mean, the DOJ, you know, was working against Trump when his own DOJ with Bill Barr, and they got rid of Jeff Sessions pretty quick because they had to get rid of Jeff. They were working against him, even his own DOJ. So it isn't even like a predecessor thing. It's that the president's going to be worried while he's trying to make very important decisions, many of which we don't know because a lot of stuff happens. It's classified. It's not public. And the president is going to be skittish and nervous about making decisions because, exactly, again, this right. is going to hang over his head.
And the whole idea, and this was Ketanji Brown Jackson, no man is above the law. You know, this should, and it also creates a lot of separation of power issues, which is Congress can't pass these vague laws, and all of a sudden, some out of control prosecutor decides to apply it to the president. There's separation of power issues there as well. But she was saying, you know, the whole no man is above the law. Well, can you tell me another individual who can authorize the killing of people, killing yeah. them, and getting away with it? There's only one person in the country who can do that.
And that's kill Americans like Obama did. I mean, he right. droned, you know, he droned an American. So, but also, you know, the examples they give are kind of silly in a way that it's like, what if he killed someone? Okay, but that's not what we're talking about here. You know, he's not actually committing not just a you know, some crime the DOJ is manufacturing, but it's like something on the books that everybody understands is a crime, whether it's stealing or carjacking or, you know, those examples are useless in this situation. But again, that's why it's a slippery slope.
It is. So there definitely was a concern with that. And I love Michael Dreeben, the DOJ attorney, said, well, but the president is uniquely situated because he will have an attorney general and he has the best lawyers around him and they will advise him whether
so funny.
Whatever decision he's going to make could subject him to criminal liability. And they sort of laughed that off. And again, I think it was Alito or Gorsuch said, well, hold on there, counselor. You know, we both worked in the DOJ. Yes, we've had a lot of good attorney generals. We've had some not so good ones. And yes, it's very easy to get a grand jury indictment. I think it was John Roberts said, you can't tell us that this will go to a grand jury and Americans will ultimately decide the criminal liability of a former president. He said, how many times do you recall a prosecutor not getting an indictment when they wanted one? And of course, he really had no answer. So
yeah,
they are very concerned about the reckless nature of this DOJ and, you know, Jack Smith as well. So I think that's where that's headed. But there was other big news this week in classified documents case in Southern Florida. I've been posting this really all week. And that is Judge Cannon authorizing unredactions in a big motion to compel. We won't get into that, but basically demonstrating, and this is why Special Counsel Jack Smith wanted a lot of this information concealed from the public, demonstrating, proving that the Biden White House was in cahoots with the National Archives and the Department of Justice in 2021, not after the raid, not after Trump turned over the boxes, throughout 2021 to concoct some sort of records slash documents case against Trump. And this motion to compel was heavily redacted on a protective order. The defense came and to Judge Cannon and said, we want big parts of this unredacted. This has been like a 3-month battle. She finally authorized the unsealing. And now we know why, because this completely contradicts not only Jack Smith's criminal indictment, which he says, oh, the DOJ opened this, you know, became involved in February of 2022. No, not true. But, you know, also public, what the public has been told about how the DOJ and FBI opened this investigation into documents. So there's other allegations of grand jury abuse, prosecutorial abuse. In one case, Jay Brett, who is the lead prosecutor for the classified documents case, threatening Stanley Woodward, who is the attorney representing Joaquin Nauta, Trump's longtime personal aide, who's also a co-defendant in this case, a few weeks after the Mar-a-Lago raid, threatening Stanley Woodward that the DOJ would scuttle Woodward's application to be a judge in D.C. Superior Court and pressuring him to get Walt Nauta to flip on Trump and become a government witness. So those are just some of the revelations. People can look at my Twitter, Julie_Kelly2. I've posted a ton of those motions and I'll be working on a whole piece trying to distill that. But Liz, this DOJ is just so dirty and out of control and unaccountable, totally shameless. And, you know, kudos to Judge Cannon, because she is the only judge who is forcing some accountability and transparency into this really dirty manufactured case.
Do you think overall this is successfully hurting Trump, all of these prosecutions? Do you think it's helping Biden, or do you think it's hurting Biden and helping people get a see the bigger picture, where this is just a weaponized government going after its, you know, threats to its political interest?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think that this has to further discredit what this DOJ is doing with Trump. And, you know, Joe Biden came out after the raid of Mar-a-Lago and insisted he had nothing to do with this. He wasn't notified. He didn't know.
Right.
Well, that's a lie, because Jonathan Hsu, who's in his general counsel's office, the White House general counsel in the White House, was in communication constantly with the archives and trying also to figure out a way to circumvent the automatic notification triggering under the Presidential Records Act. If a government agency is seeking records under PRA, they have to notify the record holder, which would be Trump. So he's trying to figure out a way with the archives to circumvent that so they can get notes from Trump's aides and they can get these records from NARA without letting Trump know. That's a crime. I mean, right?
Terrible.
Rule of law, but this is how deep. So we're supposed to believe that Jonathan Hsu was doing this constantly throughout 2021, or at least the last half, and he didn't tell Joe Biden. He didn't tell Lisa Monaco. He didn't tell. I mean, you're not going to do that as a general counsel unless you have the authority from.
Yeah, it has to get off. Yeah, it has to be okayed at the highest level. Or else it would be like sabotage, right? Like he would be open to like going rogue or something. So yeah, this is disgraceful. The one thing I wonder about, and we probably won't know, although I guess we might know depending on how some of these cases, what the Supreme Court does and how long these cases are postponed, is they are effectively keeping Trump off the campaign trail, which, you know, he is a pretty good campaigner. People like to go to his events that really helped him in 2016, and keeping him off the campaign trail and keeping him from being able to go to events and do things and, you know, invigorate people and get his enthusiasm up, which Biden suffers from a lack of enthusiasm. And a lot of most good polls will ask people when they say, you know, who are you voting for president, voting for Donald Trump, are you voting for Joe Biden? They'll ask, are you strongly supporting Biden, or are you somewhat supporting Biden? Same with Trump, strongly supporting Trump, somewhat supporting Trump. And Trump has so much more enthusiasm, which are voters who are strongly voting for Trump. So keeping him off the campaign trail kind of keeps him away from growing that even more. Right. Getting more popular and having more people who say, I mean, how many people said in 2016, oh, you know, I really changed when I went to a campaign event. So keeping Trump too busy, bogged down, a million things going on, forcing him to be in a courtroom all day. Who knows what other case will try the same thing? I don't know. Maybe another judge is going to say, yeah, you have to physically be here. You know, what that effect will be. I mean, we may know, we may not know.
Well, I will tell you, in terms of the Southern Florida case classified documents, Judge Cannon has said very forcefully many times that Donald Trump is a defendant. He has a constitutional right, just as Judge Juan Merchan, the opposite of what he did. And if he is stuck in a courtroom or court hearing somewhere else, that the proceedings in Florida, where he is entitled to attend, and he has attended the last two where he's been involved, that those proceedings will be postponed until he can participate. So she is very protective of that right.
That's great.
So at least the Southern Florida proceedings are going to be delayed until the New York trial is over. Now, there's a good chance, though, Liz, that the Southern Florida trial will go off before the election. And I get a sense from Judge Cannon that she really wants the DOJ to have to go on trial in Southern Florida, right? We're not New York, we're not Manhattan, we're not Washington, D.C. We're in Southern Florida, which is a good mix, probably more Trump supporters here than non-Trump supporters in this area. And I'm in Southern Florida right now. I think there's a big part of her that wants Jack Smith to have to put this case before a Florida jury and just have the defense team eviscerate him and prove to the people what a manufactured case this was from the very beginning. So there is a chance that that could still be pulled up, because the Washington trial, there's just, you know, a 1% chance it could be pulled up before the election. Now, the flip side, Liz, is it could go off after the election, even if Trump wins. The DOJ and Judge Chutkan can, if this is all resolved and he has to go on trial for personal acts in office, they would put him trial in December. Even if he won, they would do it.
That is so crazy. I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer, but constitutionally, I mean, I don't know if that's even, I want to say, I don't know if that's allowed.
Of course it is. I mean, he wouldn't take office till January 20th, 2025. Right. So he can't do anything.
That is crazy. That is so disruptive. That is so crazy. And that is where you really get a sense that these people are such institutionalists, right? The DOJ, these bureaucrats, whatever, there's 5 million bureaucrats, I believe, people, and more, even more contractors. So a lot of people that have an interest in the government, they are such institutionalists. They want to preserve this corrupt system that they control at any cost, because that would be just awful to have an incoming president in the mix of some surreal witch hunt trial, whatever. I mean, I don't know how you could say you care about this country and then do something, you know, and then proceed with something like that and not care about how that makes the U.S. look internationally, or just even domestically. I mean, what a nightmare. But they don't care, because they really want to tear everything down anyway and get us all back in the communist framework.
So. Well, and look what happened in Arizona this week. So the day before Supreme Court is going to hear about the indictments, which relates to alternative slate of electors, the probably not legitimately elected attorney general in Arizona, didn't she really not win?
Oh, yeah.
So she indicted.
Very sus. As the kids say.
She indicts, you know, several people who were electors and then created these alternative certificates. So they're not stopping. And, you know, Liz, then where are Republican attorney generals? What are they doing? Nothing.
You know, every time I hear about the fake electors, it makes me think that, like, there are these electors that put on, like, masks to look like the real electors. I mean, that's how they ratchet up the rhetoric around this. Like, there's fake electors. Having alternative slates of electors is not illegal. It's not. It's been done before. So.
Oh, boy. So, well, anyway, Liz, next week. All right. It's like a teeny tiny breather, because there's no Supreme Court hearings. We'll probably still be getting some information out of the classified documents case. Donald Trump's still on trial in Manhattan all of next week. But also next Thursday, finally, the appellate court in Michigan, actually it's in Nashville for that circuit, will hear the appeals of two of the defendants convicted in the Whitmer FedNapping hoax. So that has been a long slog. So I will be covering that as well and see how that goes.
All right, Julie. Well, that's our hour. So I've got to ask you what I always ask at the end of all of our shows, which is, will we be here next week?
We will.
All right. So we're going to be here next week with more news, more sass. More crazy things to talk about. So more, if you haven't already,
over Van Halen,
more fight. We're going to talk about music. Julie's sad, pathetic taste in music, my impeccable taste in music. So have a great weekend. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes and also Spotify, where Joe Rogan does his show. Go out, touch grass, get off the internet, go outside. It's nice. Although if you have allergies, some places it's just disgusting. There's tons, so much pollen here in DC. But again, have a great weekend and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Happy Hour with Julie and Liz. We'll see you next week.